Many of you will know we are continuing this summer through a season with the Psalms, and the Psalm for today is 65. If you have a copy of the worship bulletin or if you have downloaded one online, I invite you to join in the lines that are indented. Praise is due to you, O God, in Zion, and to you shall vows be performed. O you who answer prayer, to you all flesh shall come. When deeds of iniquity overwhelm us, you forgive our transgressions. Happy are those whom you choose and bring near to live in your courts. We shall be satisfied with the goodness of your house, your holy temple. By awesome deeds you answer us with deliverance, O God of our salvation. You are the hope of all the ends of the earth and of the farthest seas. By your strength you established the mountains. You are girded with might. You silenced the roaring of the seas, the roaring of their waves, the tumult of the peoples. You silence those who live at earth's farthest bounds are awed by your signs. You make the gateways of the morning and the evening shout for joy. You visit the earth and water it. You greatly enrich it. The river of God is full of water. You provide the people with grain, for so you have prepared it. You water its furrows abundantly, settling its riches, softening it with showers and blessing its growth. You crown the year with your bounty. Your wagon tracks overflow with richness. The pastures of the wilderness overflow. The hills gird themselves with joy. The meadows clothe themselves with flocks. The valleys deck themselves with grain. They shout and sing together for joy. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Sometime back when we updated our television, I began to ask around about good programs to watch on the TV that now had a laser-sharp picture. Many of you offered really fine suggestions, like a concert where the rock star Sting sings with a full orchestra, or some reworked Alfred Hitchcock movies, or remarkable entertainment of all kinds from all kinds of places. By far, the best suggestion was a series of nature shows that we had missed when first broadcast on a channel we didn't know about. The series was called Planet Earth. There were 11 shows, all about an hour long, each one narrated with the flawless direction of Sir David Attenborough. And Sir David took us on a tour of the entire planet. We climbed the Himalayas to see the snow leopards. We descended to the caves of Borneo to see the bats. We recoiled at the sight of the 6-foot-long salamander in Japan or the piranhas in Brazil. We flew from mountain peaks to desert sands to coral reefs off the coast of Australia. The aurora borealis glimmered over the top of northern Scotland while the winds blew the savanna grasses in the equator of Africa. The series is stunning, and so have proved to be the sequels as well. Now these days, that might be common hat for anybody. You can flip to the National Geographic Channel or watch a veterinarian do surgery on the Yukon. But what was so powerful about Planet Earth as a series was the ability to scan the breadth, depth, and diversity of this entire planet in about 11 hours. It was far more interesting than watching an old rerun of a movie, because we could see firsthand the power and majesty of God's creation. Now, the poet who gives us Psalm 65 is well acquainted with this world. He didn't have high-definition cameras at his disposal, nor did he travel very far, but in this song of praise, it is clear to him that God is making all of this, that God is the inventor of meadows and hills, the giver of grain, the source of water and wind. The seas roar like the lions, the waves smash against the rocks. By their sheer size, the mountains call us to lift our praises skyward. And when the rains fall, as they fell so abundantly this last Friday night, the whole creation is renewed. God stands behind all of this, says the poet. And the magnitude of creation is overwhelming. Certainly proceeds from the imagination of a superior being to see the world in all its size as well as its intricate smallness can be humbling for us who think we know so much yet are unable to manage so little. The poet looks toward God and declares, "By awesome deed you answer us, O God. You are the hope to the ends of the earth." It was John Calvin who said it well. There is not one little blade of grass, there is no color in this world that is not intended to make us rejoice. Calvin didn't travel very far either to observe this. Like the ancient psalmist, he stuck pretty close to home and simply paid attention. Yet Calvin and the psalmist both experienced enough of God's creation to hear the invitation to rejoice and to welcome God's abundant rule over it all. The hallmarks of God's rule are creativity and abundance, especially abundance. There is so much to see, so much to taste, so much to embrace and learn and enjoy. If you spent your time on the porch watching that rainstorm, as others did, you saw the rain pop down and dance on the sidewalk and then roll off to renew the soil. And pretty soon, you know as well as I, everything's going to sprout up even faster. It's all so much. It's all a gift from the Creator. Even those unwanted dandelions will pop up, or that runaway spearmint that threatens to conquer the flower garden. Or better yet, those fresh strawberries that my wife just made into jam. It's all good. And there's so much of it. The Bible is not bashful about the creation. As one Bible scholar notes, the Bible itself starts out with a litany of abundance. Genesis 1 is a song of praise for God's generosity. It tells how the world is ordered. It keeps saying, "It is good, it is good, it is good, it is very good." Declares that God blesses, that is, God endows with vitality the plants and the animals and the fish and the birds and the humankind. And it pictures the Creator as saying, "Be fruitful and multiply." In an orgy of fruitfulness, everything in its kind is to multiply the overflowing goodness that pours from God's creative spirit. And as you know, the creation ends in Sabbath. God is so overrun with fruitfulness that God says, "I've got to take a break from all this. I'm going to step out of the office." There's so much. Our psalm looks around the fields and bursts into song. You crown the year with bounty. Your wagon tracks overflow with richness. God creates more than we need. Yet here is the question. If there is so much, why do some folks think there is so little? Perhaps they grew up in constricted times. I won't call them the elderly, I'll call them the long-experienced ones of our acquaintance. They may have grown up in economic depression. Banks failed, jobs disappeared, 3 slices of bologna had to feed 5 people. It's hard for younger folks to even imagine, especially when so many of us have convinced ourselves that old luxuries are now necessities. Like that cell phone, which would have been deemed a waste of money 25 years ago. Or that big TV that I convinced myself we had to have since everyone else had one. Why not me? Decisions like this were absurd to my grandmother, who was born in 1914 and raised in rural simplicity in a time of widespread depression and poverty. Whenever I would phone her, she would say, "You better hang up. This call is costing you an arm and a leg." One time, after hearing it 1,000 times, I told her she was worth the double amputation, so she hung up on me. In her generation, you didn't waste money because you didn't have enough money to go around. You cleaned your plate because the next meal was uncertain, and you never, ever, ever bought more shoes than you could wear. The lesson was instructive, and it went like this: simplicity out of necessity. Grow your own food, make your own clothing, walk on your own 2 feet, above all, live modestly. Now, by contrast, remember back 4 months to the beginning days of this pandemic. Those who had the means hoarded all the toilet paper and stockpiled the Lysol and paper towels. Now, what was all that about? Fear, of course. Fear that there wouldn't be enough to go around. I need mine, even if that means you're not going to get yours. And who was doing all this hoarding but the people who could afford it? Those who had to have what their neighbors couldn't find. And my hunch is, even today, they haven't begun to use all that they have stockpiled. So let's set this in the context of Psalm 65. God creates this abundant world, teeming with life, filled with resources. There is plenty for everybody. Yet the recurring human response is the fear of scarcity. That's the issue, isn't it? Not that God creates abundance, but there won't be enough to go around. Do we have a world full of abundance or a world of scarcity? That's the choice, and how we answer makes all the difference. Walter Brueggemann, the Old Testament theologian, points out that the fear of scarcity is exactly what led the Egyptian enslavement of the Hebrew people. God created this abundant earth, a Psalm 65 earth, and in the 47th chapter of Genesis, Pharaoh of Egypt dreams there will be a famine in the land. So what does Pharaoh do? He gets organized to administer and control and monopolize all the crops. Pharaoh introduces the principle of scarcity into the world economy, and for the first time in the Bible, somebody says, "There's not enough, so let's get everything." Because Pharaoh was afraid there aren't going to be enough things to go around, he must then try to get them all. Because he is fearful, he becomes ruthless. And he hires Joseph to manage the monopoly. When the crops fail and the peasants run out of food, they come to Joseph, and on behalf of Pharaoh, Joseph says, "What's your collateral?" They give up their land for food. And then the next year, they give up their cattle. By the third year of the famine, they have no collateral except themselves, which is how the children of Israel become slaves through an economic transaction. Brueggemann says by the end of Genesis 47, Pharaoh has all the land except that belonging to the priests, which he never touches because, as a good politician, he needs the priests to bless him. And in this, the notion of scarcity is introduced into biblical faith. And the book of Exodus records the contest between generosity and the myth of scarcity. a context that still tears us apart today. Is there enough or not? Psalm 65 says there is plenty, an abundance to go around, a world teeming with generosity. But some folks just aren't so sure. Sometimes the matter is translated into moral terms. The Apostle Paul had to address some lazy people in one of his churches in Greece. Apparently, some of them were sitting around, doing nothing, never working, waiting for the Lord to come, and in a moment of frustration, Paul bellowed, "If you don't work, you don't eat." But by contrast, Jesus, on more than one occasion, fed the multitudes that had no work and therefore had no food. These were the poor, plundered by an occupying army. So Jesus collected the little bread that they had and broke it, and there was plenty to go around. More abundance than they could imagine. And in the moment they discovered he's the sower who throws more seed into the field than the field can ever use. The early church followed after Jesus. In the book of Acts, they shared everything they had and gave freely to those in need. Yet in one tragic tale, two church people, Ananias and Sapphira, sold some real estate and held back some of the funds for themselves. St. Peter confronted them. It didn't turn out well. And my question is, why do people do this? Why do some share and others clutch? Picture two brothers. One gives freely, the other hunkers over all his stuff. How can that be? Raised in the same home, fed at the same table, given the same opportunities, loved equally by the same parents, yet one lives out of abundance, the other fears scarcity. How can this be? I don't know. What I do know is beneath it all, behind it all, in front of it all, God creates a world of abundance. There is more than we need. There is plenty for all. So whether it's human fear or the perceived inequality of everybody being treated fairly or good old-fashioned greed, we still have a distribution problem. And what's more, no matter how much some of us have, we do still want more, especially if that gets ahead of us, gets us ahead of the person next to us. So ultimately, it is a matter of the heart, and everyone has to decide. Will we live with the assumption of abundance or live with the fear of scarcity? And if there is an abundance, what are we going to do with it? Hoard or share? While we decide, Psalm 65 still celebrates the God who goes on giving. When the earth runs dry, God sends the rain. When the birds and the beasts are hungry, God provides the food. When we find ourselves in trouble, says the psalmist, God gives us help. And when deeds of iniquity twist us out of shape, God sets us free, forgiving us to start anew. Every single day, every lonely night, God provides the abundance. And we can spend a lot of time wondering, is this really the way God is? Well, we can wonder all we want. For what the psalmist declares is what I say to you all, abundance wins. Abundance always wins. And our lives themselves depend on God's generosity.